Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for this 46th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Deng Quan. He's a young man who was born in South Sudan, but fled the violence at the age of 7 and then lived in 3 different UN refugee camps in Ethiopia, a country that became the second home to him. Ethiopia is much like the landscape of central Nevada and is host to about 630,000 South Sudanese refugees in 23 camps throughout the country, 190,000 of whom were new refugees just last year. Welcome, Deng, and thank you for being willing to come on New Mainers Speak with me.
Thank you.
What kinds of things do you remember from your early life in Wandan, South Sudan, before the violence uprooted your life?
The thing that I remember was not too much, because at that time I was really a young boy. The thing that I could remember at the moment was a war. Then we usually, you know, fleeing our home and running the bush. There was, you know, a bombing of helicopter gunship, you know, coming or disturbing, you know, us every day. And then we always running in the bush and until we decide, you know, to flee, you know, our home and stay away from war.
And so who all fled when you left?
I fled with my cousin, and she took me away from my parents, and because there was no protection, you know, for being there in our homeland, because we usually experience, you know, a violence from day to day. Then they took me away from my parents because my father was a soldier. And he remained there as a soldier, and they took me with them.
And did you travel very far on foot, or did you get rides to the UN refugee camp? How did you make it there?
Yeah, it was a long journey. You know, people almost walked for 2 weeks and then reached to Ethiopia. After, when you reach to Ethiopia, and the Ethiopian government will take you or transport you to refugee camp, you know, to other part of the country, especially in the western part of Ethiopia, when we were arrived, you know, they took us, you know, and they transferred us to west part of the country.
When you're walking for 2 weeks, you can't really be carrying food that you need for 2 weeks. How do you find food along the way?
Yeah, usually people, the focus was to survive, you know, in order to survive or escape from, you know, from violence, then you have to forget about food. You have to forget about whatever, you know, you could may have in your lives. The only good thing was, you know, to have water to drink. Then if you have water to drink, that was good enough. But there was other thing that you can find, you know, on the way, like, you know, eating the fruit of the tree. And then you can survive for your journey until you get, you know, the food, you know, that can make you sustainable, you know, for survival.
Sure. So as long as you have water and maybe some fruit along the way, you can walk for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That's really impressive. You lived in 3 different UN refugee camps, some with a population up to 21,000 people. And I'm wondering what a normal day looked like while living in the camp for you. Can you describe what it looked like and felt like in these camps?
Yeah, my first camp was Dima. And as I told you before, I came at the age of 7. When I was at the refugee camp, it was fine for me. It was good seeing my education. Then I go to school and there was enough food. Then there was no problem. But the other problem was transportation, going to school and walk for almost 1 hour and a half, and, you know, climb the mountain, you know, was really difficult, you know, at that time for me.
So your school wasn't on the refugee camp?
It was far away, almost 1 hour to walk and come back again.
So did you go to school with Ethiopian children?
At a refugee camp, no. We have been our own school because there was a difference between Ethiopia and refugee. But the difference was, as a refugee, they don't have to learn Ethiopian language. So in order to abuse, it's like kind of thing, you know, the UNHCR and Ethiopian government, they put us in our own school so that we can learn English. Anytime we could go back to our home. So the only good thing to have is to know English, because when you go back your home country, you'll know what to do with a language that you've been already know.
It's quite respectful, isn't it, of Ethiopia to make sure that the Sudanese are learning in English.
Yeah.
The country's former language. Is it your state language in South Sudan?
Yeah. Especially in South Sudan, many people, they know English. They've been learned in 19th century when British was in Sudan. It was only the language, you know. Many people can speak in English. And it been considered a second language for many South Sudanese. Yeah.
On a day when you weren't in school, what kinds of things would you do around the refugee camp?
The thing that we do only when after we come back from school, we have a group, with other kids. We usually, you know, reading in a group, and to make sure that there are some people, you know, who can understand much better than other, and in a way of cooperation, you can share the volume of education or what or the benefit, you know, that someone can give it to other children. So that is what we have at that time, reading in a group.
You practice your lessons together?
Yeah.
And say you're a really good reader, you'll help the other students who are struggling a little more?
Yeah, actually, like, if I know math, I can help other children with. If someone know English, can help other children. If someone know physics or chemistry or any subject, you know, or if you have any difficulty, you know, how do you do the formula, or how do you derive the formula, you can ask other children who are much better than you. Mm. And then at that point, you should be okay, you know, in school.
That's brilliant. So you come up with your own student-led school at home to reinforce the lessons.
Yeah. Huh.
So what were some of the secrets for survival in a refugee camp? Was it ever hard to feel safe or to get food or water?
Actually, in my 2 years in my living at two different camps was really good, but in the third one, the life was not easy for me. It was really bad life ever that I will never imagine to live again in that life, because when my cousin left me, they went back to Sudan. And then I live alone, and I was taken by UNHCR, and they put me in a compound where they live, and they request me to work to interpret, you know, the language, because I know almost four different languages, and they want me to interpret them into English. So beside that, I was a student, and I don't want to lose my education, because education means something to me, because when I have education, nobody will take it away from me. But when I have job, anytime someone can take it over, and I refuse to do so. And the food that they gave me, it was not enough. I could stay for more than 15 days without knowing when I'm going to have food or where will I get it. And then it was really bad for me. And I could imagine, you know, to live that life again.
Sounds like a really difficult situation. How old were you when they wanted you to translate for them?
I was almost like 16 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you speak four languages, did you say?
Yeah.
What are they?
I speak Amharic, Arabic, Wuduk, and Anuak.
And English.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that. So when you have a school for your refugee camp, is there a separate building or do you meet outside?
Yeah, it's a separate building. It divide into section, different section. Each section with a respective class or grade. You know, there we usually meet because it was open compound, and when there's no someone in, like a teacher, you can come out or you can make fun outside, or if you want to go to library, you can go to library. But we usually, you know, wandering in the compound and make some funny, and then that was what we usually do it.
Where did the teachers come from that were teaching you?
Most of them are from Ethiopia. We have some from South Sudan, because when they fail, you know, there's a people, you know, when they are in 10th grade, there's a 10th grade in Ethiopia, it's like it being entrance exam. So if you fail the first that entrance exam, so you can apply to be a teacher, you know, for primary or junior school, then you can do that. But most of the teachers are from Ethiopia.
Do they drive in or do they live there with you?
Yeah, they're living together with me in the compound, especially from 2009 until 2011. I've been with them together in the same compound.
So being new in Maine, I wonder what kind of surprises you found along the way. What's it like? Is it what you expected? And what are the big surprises?
Yeah, my big surprise was food, because I don't know. If I go to a store and I have no idea what kind of food, and I saw different food that I don't imagine that I could see in United States, like
snails.
Yeah, something like that. And it was really big surprise to me, because I don't know if there's a people in United States who could, you know, who could eat that snail.
Food's a funny thing, isn't it? What we eat.
Yeah, it's really funny.
Do you sometimes wonder what's in that can? You know, whether it's beans or fiddleheads or...
Yeah, you know, something like that. Even it's really difficult for me to know even the name, what kind of food, even the name, what kind of name do they have. It's really make my different, and then it's really difficult for me to go to a store, and you know, even though if I have money, I could go to a store because I don't know what kind of food do I'm going to eat there.
Yes. Do you have a favorite kind of food that you found here?
No, not yet.
Do you like soda?
No, not that much.
No.
Yeah.
So sweet.
Yeah.
You're listening to WMPG, Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USM. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. If you're just joining us, welcome. My guest today is Deng Kwan. He was born in Wandan, South Sudan, and lived as a refugee in three camps in Ethiopia while he grew up. He arrived in the United States in late June of 2014 and came to Portland with his younger brother to meet up with his cousins who were already established here. You've been on your own for a while and you've come through some really tough times. How have you managed to stay so warm and open-hearted, and what do you attribute your success to?
Yeah, actually, like when I was at the age of 16, was not really easy for me because I couldn't stay for more than 20 days. I don't have food, and I don't know when I'm going to have when or where I'm going to get food. But the only thing that was coming into my mind was, you know, to knowing that there's a God. Then I'm not going to die because of food. And sometimes I go to school, you know, I have sometime up day without food, and I go to school and I couldn't stop going to school because of the food. And then I know that one day I'm going to have something better than this situation. But my hope was only God, because I don't have other option than believe that there's a God.
You had to go on faith.
Yeah.
That you were going to be looked after.
Yeah.
Yeah. What role has religion played in your life?
Yeah, I've been as Adventist, Seventh-day Adventist.
Seventh-day Adventist?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And did you participate in church services in the refugee camps?
Yes, I do. Then we usually go to church, and then before the services, we usually do a discussion called Sabbath, and we usually, you know, talking about the detail about the Bible. We usually do that. After that, you know, we go for the special services like worshiping after the Sabbath, and then we usually do such kind of things.
So Bible class, then service, then social?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you've been to church here as a Seventh-day Adventist, is that right?
Yeah.
How is it different being a Seventh-day Adventist in Maine versus in Ethiopia?
Yeah, the difference is only the time. We usually spend my time there in Ethiopia. We usually stay in the church for a whole day. But here in United States, there's something that called AY in Adventist. So AY mean that Adventist yours. And then it is mean that after the services, we supposed to remain in the church and spend our time in the church. But here in U.S., there's no AY, but I don't know why, but it could maybe in other case, but they already know it. There's AY, but we usually there in Ethiopia stay in the church and again go to Bible and discuss it in a group with other people or with the people that are being willing to spend their time in the church. But here in United States, there's no. But that is only different that I saw here.
Can you tell me more about your personal belief system? You had said to me that you accept reality. And I'm kind of curious to learn more about that. It sounds like you believe in people's rights to choose their own path and to self-correct along the way.
Yeah, especially this has been you know, such a reality play, you know, much different in my life, because when I was in the camp, you know, people, you know, used to humiliate, you know, other people, you know, by putting their own benefit first. It doesn't matter whether your decision makes sense or not, because they have something that they need to get it before you. And then I saw that. But when I become, you know, the age of 17, and then I lost, you know, trusting people at that time. And then in order, you know, to lose, you know, trusting people, you have to know something, you know, that could make different. And at that time, you know, I accept, you know, to be reality, that is the only way, you know, to make change in your life. Because if you push your decision up on other people, it doesn't make sense to them. And then you have to know that if they could accept that decision, because even for me, I don't want to oppose my decision up on other people, because that is not what they want. And then that is what I mean reality, because someone cannot impose his decision upon me. I would not accept that decision. Then the same to other people too. They don't suppose, you know, to accept that, you know. That is what I mean about reality.
So if I get this right, you lost people?
I lost trusting people at the age of 17. I don't trust people anymore at that time.
Lost trust in people.
Yeah.
Yes, at 17.
Yeah.
So you realized that you may have a system that works for you.
Yeah.
But you don't want to push that on other people.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like you didn't like when other people wanted to push their ideas on you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So very respectful of their belief systems.
Yeah.
You strongly believe in your own.
Yeah. Yeah, most of the time I don't like someone to force me to do something which is against my will. The same feeling for me too. Other people, I think they don't like it too. Then they don't need someone to force them to do their will. The same to me, the feeling that I have, because we have a different unique way of life as a human being.
And it's better too, right? When you get together with someone else that chooses to believe something and you choose to believe the same thing, you really share something.
Yeah.
When it hasn't been forced.
Yeah.
Yes. So, Deng, what are your hopes and dreams for the future? You've really just been here in the United States for half a year. Where would you like to end up? What would you like to do with your life here?
My first priority to go to school, because when I have education, it means so much to me. And if I would complete my education, I would, you know, I would create, you know, an environment, you know, with other people too. We would like, you know, to put a system, you know, that create, you know, a better environment for everybody, well distribution, you know, well treatment, and then correct, you know, obstacle, you know, that people always complaining. Then that is what I would like to do.
Just make the world a better place.
Yeah.
A safer place.
Yeah.
Yeah. You had said something about public health.
Yeah.
At one point, you're interested in studying public health?
Yeah, I would like to say the public health policies and management. So I really want to be a minister of health. So, you know, to be a minister of health, I need to say the public health. So I would correct, you know, the thing that disturbing people, you know, or the environment which they don't like it, or the thing that they would like to change. And then I would like that, you know, to happen if I would have a chance, you know, to become minister of health.
A chance to become?
A minister of health.
A minister of health.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you would like to go back to South Sudan.
Yeah.
And bring all your education with you.
Yeah.
And make life better for people there.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. I wish you the best on that path.
All right, thank you.
You're a very kind young man, and you laugh so easily. It's a pleasure to be with you. Right. I very much respect your desire to learn about public health so that you may one day help others who are in vulnerable situations.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for being willing to come on New Manor Speak today.
Thank you. I'm really glad, you know, to be here. This is my first time to be on radio, but it was really just as curious for me. It scared me, but...
But you have a lot of courage.
Thank you.
I think you've probably faced up to a lot of things that have scared you and found out how strong you really are.
Especially, you know, living in the camp was not easy. But when you have hope, you know, you have God, you know, it's mean everything for you. And you can't go beyond that. You know, the thing that was only make different, it was a time factor. And then time make different. Nothing can make different. Only time make different. Because even the people that used to treat us there, you know, it was not because they were better human being, but it was only time different, because you can, anyone can be better than them, or anyone could be less than them, then it depends, you know, on the time. Then.
Yes, yeah. there's a saying that says, there, but yeah. For the grace of God go I. Yeah. Is that what you mean by timing? Like if things had happened at a different time, they would affect different people?
Yeah, especially, you know, most of the, you know, in this modern world, you know, people who hold a job or something, you know, like having higher power, you know, about other people, you know, they usually, you know, put their decision on other people. But they don't know that it's only different time, you know, being done today doesn't mean that you're always there. But there's a time that you will be above that person again, then... That is what I mean.
Yeah, again with the faith. You know that when you're down, it's not forever.
Yeah, not forever, yeah.
You will come back up.
Yeah.
Yes, you do rise. We will close today's program with a song that Deng has selected for us, and I wondered if you could introduce this song to the audience and tell why you chose it.
Yeah. Oh, Lord, my God. This song, you know, I like it because, you know, there's no one above God, and then God is above everybody or for everything, and then it... He has done so many things for me. How I was survived, my hope was only up on him. Even I could turn it away, you know, to other people. This song mean, you know, many things to me. It mean, you know, the circumstance, you know, that I was through, that I has gone through. It mean, you know, how the God, you know, has created the world. It is mean also, you know, my relationship with him. And that is what the song mean to me.
He's your protection in the past and your hope in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is, oh God, oh Lord my God, how great thou art.
Yeah.
Oh Lord my God, when I in awesome wonder consider all the works thy hand hath made, I see the stars, I hear the mighty thunder, thy path throughout the universe.